Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Yeah, well, I understand. I'm just saying that's the way I looked at it. Now, if I'm cutting it, it's like, no, I got to stay on top of it. Anyway, have a great weekend, Dave Cohen. Ian McNulty joins us now, who covers dining and eating and everything else for the Times-Picayune and the New Orleans Advocate, food and dining culture. How you doing, Ian McNulty?
I'm doing great, Tommy. Great to be back with you. And let me tell you how much I value our food talks, how much I love talking food with you and with your audience. I'm taking this call from the road. I am at the tail end of a great little vacation up in New England, and it has been a food-filled romp, as you can imagine. And I've got stories to tell of food of foreign lands, but also plenty to chat about back home in New Orleans, with a number of cool stories that posted despite my physical absence from the marketplace there. So we can, we can do a little trotting between two coasts, Gulf Coast and Atlantic Coast.
I want to hear them all. And also I want to let the audience know they can text in to 504-260-1870. Yes, sir. Oakland Art Jeweler talking text line. If you got any questions or comments about eating or drinking anywhere in the area, we'll pass them along to Ian McNulty. He's with us for the hour. So tell me where, how do you want to start?
Yeah, well, let me tell you a little story, a food story. Okay. So I grew up in Rhode Island. That's where I'm sitting right now, looking at beautiful Narragansett Bay. And I did not grow up a foodie. I grew up eating burgers and fish and chips and mac and cheese and, you know, whatever mom was cooking, and was grateful to have it. It wasn't until I moved to New Orleans and discovered the incredible food culture that pulses the community and through the people, through the restaurants and the home cooking and the passion that people have for it, and the way that it's this inescapable topic of conversation because it's such a valued part of life and culture in New Orleans, that I just seized on it. And that, you know, I became a foodie. Eventually it led to a career. And of course you take that with you everywhere you go, including back home. And so going back home, suddenly, you know, for visits, suddenly the veil was lifted, and instead of like, oh, the paths you always take, I started seeing all the potential. And you know, also I think different regions outside of New Orleans kind of came into their own as foodie regions. You know, the restaurants are much better all over the country. There's much more appreciation of food culture around the country, thanks to a lot of different reasons. Anthony Bourdain, Food TV in general, Emeril Lagasse, all of those factors. But one of the things I learned to love up here, well, two things: the raw seafood in New England, the clams in particular, of which I would have turned my nose up at as a teenager growing up here, surrounded by the stuff, and Portuguese food in particular. So this part of New England, southern New England, Rhode Island, and southern Massachusetts, has a really high concentration of Portuguese people. I knew this, but I didn't know that they cook so dang well. it wasn't until I moved to New Orleans, started getting interested in food, started discovering these little regional subcultures. Like, it's like going to New Orleans and learning, like, oh, Vietnamese food is all around us and is really good. Yeah, this is a whole thing to explore. That's how I felt about Portuguese food after I left New England and then came back. And every time I come back, I try to explore it. Now, this trip had a little more extra impetus, thanks to the aforementioned Emeril Lagasse. The great chef who's known all across the world as a New Orleans chef, started out as a Fall River, Massachusetts kid. He grew up in the city of Fall River, which is about 40 miles from where I'm sitting right now, surrounded by this hub of Portuguese culture. And lo and behold, last year, he and his son EJ opened a new restaurant in downtown New Orleans called 34, like the number 34. You and I have talked about it before. It is an upscale ode to Portuguese culture, food, and his own family, Emeril's own family. And it's magnificent. It's stylish. It's modern. It's unlike anywhere else, probably this side of Portugal, frankly. And we're really lucky to have it in downtown New Orleans. And I think it's opened a portal, if you'll pardon the pun, to Portuguese food and culture for a lot of people in New Orleans and people visiting New Orleans. So I took that as my cue to go explore where it all came from for Emeril. So over the last couple of days, I've been taking some time out of this family trip to get deep down into where my hometown is, Fall River, exploring the food scene. And Tommy, it has been wild. Let me tell you something. If you're growing up in New England, if someone was to say, oh, Fall River is this culinary hub that you need to explore, and I mean no offense by this, but it would be like somebody in Louisiana saying that about Bugaloosa, right? It would be like somebody saying, you know, you really should take a trip out of New Orleans to go explore, I don't know, downtown Denham Spring. Like, it's just a place that does not spring to mind from great food culture, even for a lot of people who grew up around it. It is a tough town. Fall River is a tough, tough city. It's got kind of a beaten down feel to it in certain ways. Mm-hmm. Old industrial town. It's right by the water. The old buildings are beautiful, but you know, it's got a little rough streak out there in the hardscrabble streets. But in between them all are these fantastic restaurants, and it feels like you're in Portugal. It feels like you're in this different country. The way people talk about coming to New Orleans and feeling they've crossed into some blend of Europe and the Caribbean. That's the way it is here. So it's been a romp through these restaurants where everything is transacted in the Portuguese language. There are these bakeries, chock-a-block, one across the street from each other in this tight cluster. It's churches that are elaborately decorated. It's men with that still have pagers on their belt drinking inky black red wine over lunch, cutting into the steak the size of a TV tray. I mean, it's a different world. And it's been fun to explore. And if you want to follow along a little bit, I've made some posts on my Instagram at Ian McNulty Nola that shows you along the way. But it's been a lot of fun. And the basis of Portuguese food is a lot of fish, a lot of cod, a lot of clams, a lot of sausage, a lot of garlic, big portions, and just this feeling that you're really immersed in somebody's culture. So as a food writer, to come back home and discover this, it's been a blast. And hats off to Emeril and his crew for opening my eyes to it back home in New Orleans.
How are we defining Portuguese food?
Well, you know, Portugal and Spain, they're next to each other on the Iberian Peninsula. There's a lot of similarities, but really distinct. You know, Spain is a little more of the tapas culture. The jamon is really big, the ham. Portuguese food, at least the way it's transmitted here overseas, it's... And let me tell you, I mean, this is first generation stuff. I mean, everyone we went into in Fall River, they're even young people. They came from the Azores Islands. You know, they've come from different parts of Portugal directly. I mean, it's very much a first generation immigrant community. The defining dishes are it's cod. It's the salt cod. It's everywhere. It's that cod that got Portuguese navigators across the globe preserved that salt process. But brought back to life to become its own specialty in the way that, you know, things that we did in the old days to preserve food become their own gourmet application over time, despite our ability to refrigerate and get fresh food. Like, you know, for instance, fine ham, prosciutto, salmones, that kind of thing. A lot of clam dishes, a lot of combinations of pork and clam, a lot of dishes that bring in spices from the old Portuguese empire and exploration. One little treat we're exploring of one bakery to the next is called Pastis de Nata. They're egg tarts. And if you've ever seen them in Chinese bakeries, they're very similar to what you find in the Chinese bakery, a Chinese egg tart, because of that history of exploration and the great age of sail. You know, the Portuguese established a colony in Macau, China, and that leads to egg tarts being in Chinese bakeries and also in Portuguese bakeries here in southern New England, because food connects. What an interesting thread that it does wind.
So somebody texted in and wants to know about, jokingly about clams, but I would like to know about what are clams like there as opposed to our experience of clams here?
Well, very hard to find clams down on the Gulf Coast. Occasionally you get some tiny ones out of Florida. But it's one of the things that I'm campaigning for. I want somebody in the New Orleans area with all these great raw bars that we have that are bringing in seafood from other waters to run an experiment even with raw clams and see if people bite. My favorite way to have clams is on the half shell raw, just like my favorite way to have oysters, because you get the essence of what you're eating. It's not dissimilar from an oyster, but it's more meaty, more chewy. maybe a thicker taste. Combine an oyster with a mussel, and maybe you're getting close to it. You know, it's you get a blast of the sea when you bite in, and a chew that's pleasant. And maybe you put a little lemon on it, maybe a little cocktail sauce, maybe a dash of Tabasco, the pride of Louisiana, on every table up here in New England, I can tell you happily. And they're a delight. They come in a few different types. Cherry stones, which are very small. Excuse me, those are the larger ones. But, you know, they can be as big as the palm of your hand, even. And then the little necks, which are kind of your starter clam, a little smaller, twice the size of your thumbnail, let's say. And, you know, I'm going to sound like Forrest Gump here, but when you come up to clam country, it's clam chowder three different ways. It's clam cakes. It's fried clams. It's clam rolls. It's all these delights.
Clam shells.
Stuffed clams.
Clam stuffies. Roads. Clam.
Exactly.
So do this.
Compare red sauce with clam.
What the people in New England would think of New Orleans food, or at least their experience of New Orleans food, compare it to our experience with clams. What us eating clams here and what you've tasted of the clams that we have here would be analogous to people in New England eating what from Louisiana and thinking they're experiencing Louisiana seafood, if that makes any sense at all to you.
Yeah, oh, it does, yeah. And probably the closest thing might be crawfish, right? Because it's just something that's based in place more than anything else, right? Like, you can get crawfish in other places, you can get clams in other places, but you know, it's better when you go to the source and you go to the place when there's a culture built around it. And so I'm not comparing the flavor of crawfish with the flavor of clams, but in the way, like, well, when I'm coming to New England, I'm getting after me some raw clams. I'm going to a raw bar, ordering a couple dozen, getting my fill, because I can't get these at home. Similar if you're coming down from anywhere else really in the country to Louisiana. If it's spring, I time the season right, I'm getting some crawfish.
So when people say, you know, you look clammy, you feel clammy, do you take that personally or not?
Oh, the misunderstood clam, my friend. Yes, it's humble. It just sits there at its sandy bed, bubbling away, filtering the water, gets raked up, tumbled around in a sack, treated like a stone, like a commodity, like a landscaping material even. And I'm telling you, my brother Tommy, you shuck that thing open, you look at it, you knock it back in a slurp, and you taste the place, you know? I mean, that's what food aficionados love about traveling around, just tasting something that's different from place to place. And I, as a food writer, as somebody who considers myself I try to open doors for people to Louisiana food, to New Orleans food, to show them the greatness of it all and keep exploring it and highlighting what I love about it, to go somewhere very out of my element, yet also the place where I grew up, and to be able to have that experience for myself. It's rewarding, and it's also recharging the battery to come back home and do it with ever more gusto for the greatness that we have around New Orleans and Louisiana.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. Come back. Spending an hour today, lucky enough to talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty, who has interrupted his New England vacation to talk to us about food. We'll talk about New Orleans restaurants when we come back. We had a story the other day, WWL did, about maybe less people eating out. And I know, Ian, you and I have talked about this for a long, long time, especially during the summertime with restaurants. And how at risk are some restaurants? And we'll talk about some choices where people can go and maybe to stimulate the industry. So it'll be win-win where you can go and have a good time and you'll help stimulate the industry and they stay in business, people stay employed, and everybody's happy except for the clam because you know what happens to them. We'll take a break. Come back. Ian McNulty's our guest. I'm Tommy Tucker, WWL. Rock on tour, man about town, rascal. I don't know how else could I describe Ian McNulty, who covers food and dining culture for the Times Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Man well read, well traveled, well hailed. You know who Ian is. It amazes me, Ian, the feedback I can get from the stuff you talk about on our Oquinar Jeweler Talk and Text Line. Again, 504-260-1.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
870, please don't ever text and drive. Somebody said, tell Ian I just got back from Rhode Island, Crow's Nest in Appanog for Steamer Clams, Providence Oyster Bar, the Boathouse in Evelyn's in Tiverton, Vonda in Warwick for Great Clams Pomodoro. I hope I'm not saying anything nasty there on the air that I shouldn't.
Now, I applaud you for your pronunciation of the Native American place names up here in New England, where everything is something from Old England or something that with many, many, many syllables from the Native American tongue. So well done on Appanog.
It's kind of like history. It all depends who won, who writes it, right? Who it's named after.
Exactly. And just like in Louisiana, how we mispronounce it forevermore. Mm.
There you go. So somebody else texted in and said, seagulls love clams too. There's a coastal highway in New England littered with broken shells. The seagulls know what height to drop them without exploding the meat inside. Do you know anything about that?
Sure, yeah. That's like the original shuckers, man. You know, who taught us, same with oysters. Look at these rocks strewn around. Let's use great effort to pry them open and find the treasured meat within. You know, taking your cues from the smart birds.
But the birds used in that, basically using the rock as a tool. A bird thought enough to think, you know what? Why are we doing this? Why take it up there and drop it? Wouldn't you wonder how they got the thought process led to that?
Get hungry enough, you get smart, I suppose.
I guess. I don't know. That's amazing. Somebody texted in and said, I had oysters Rockefeller last week at Antoine's. Please ask if he knows other places with the same quality. They were delicious. Is that the place where the oysters Rockefeller was originally created? And I know one thing they tell me, I think they told me when I ate there, was that a lot of people, because it's green, think there's spinach in it, and the recipe is closely guarded, but the one thing that is not in it is spinach. Thoughts?
Correct. That is correct, all counts. Antoine's oldest restaurant in New Orleans, and perhaps more importantly, oldest continuously family-run restaurant in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been in the same family. It's not just old, and it changed hands, and it keeps going. You know, sometimes the providence of a very old restaurant is, you know, questionable. It was started at this point. It went away for a while. It came back, et cetera. Now, Antoine's has been in the same family, meaning the same generation after generation after generation of the same bloodline running the place longer than any other restaurant in the country, going back to 1860. Incredible.
That's amazing.
And yes, they did come up with the Antoine's is the birthplace of Oysters Rockefeller in much the same way as lots of New Orleans dishes. It has been adopted as a New Orleans classic. One might say copied, one might say emulated, but definitely evolved. Similar to the case of barbecue shrimp, fried green tomatoes with shrimp remoulade, a little more contemporary version. These all came from one place, in each a different place, but evolved into a New Orleans classic that's widely interpreted at different places. So yes, at Antoine's, no spinach. It takes its name Rockefeller from its green color, meant to represent Rockefeller's money.
Money.
Yeah. Spinach is used. There is a blend of different herbs and other influences that gives it its color. But you know, in the way these things go, you'll find other renditions that absolutely use spinach. It's fun actually. It's fun to trace that dish around town. Start with the birthplace of it and see, you know, who's put their spin on it elsewhere. Even at the other old line restaurants, like you have the Oysters Rockefeller at Galatoire's, it's the same idea, but it's a much different taste and texture. And I do believe that one uses spinach. That seems pretty clear.
Man, I love that. Antoine's. I thought that was one of the best meals, best experiences I've ever had. If y'all have not been, you got to go.
Glad to hear that. It's an absolute New Orleans institution, the kind of place. I was thinking about it. You know, this is what travel does for you. It gives you a different perspective of where you're traveling, but also where you come from. And as much as I've been extolling the food up here and the different things you can get away from home, I've been also thinking about how grand it is to go back home. And part of it is not just the food. It's also the people that inhabit these restaurants. And it's the restaurant spaces themselves. Because, you know, in other places around the country, I'm not saying this is New Orleans exclusive, but, you know, you very often you're eating in a, you know, what was, it, maybe it was built in a strip mall. Maybe it was built on a just a blank pad along the main drag. In New Orleans, we're eating in mansions and townhouses and old corner stores that have all been converted to restaurants. And it's part of the, you know, the architectural heritage of our city that is reinterpreted for hospitality and for restaurants that have their doors open to us. Not something to be discounted or overlooked with the pleasure of dining out and going into these spaces and enjoying them for the course of a meal. Pretty significant.
Somebody texted in and said, where can I go to get great hibachi on a Friday or Saturday night?
Hibachi, of course, this is entertainment dining, right? We're sat around the tabletop grill, and the chefs are doing
it. But wait, let me jump in for a second. Is that the whole idea behind a hibachi? Is it not anything specifically about the food? Because, you know, let's face it, you can grill it however you want. It's about the showmanship with the volcano onion or whatever it is.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, basically what you're getting is, you know, you're probably getting a side of a sushi roll to get you started. Mm-hmm. You're getting eggs and rice cooked together in front of you on the tabletop. Maybe you're getting some teriyaki steak. Maybe it's grilled shrimp. I mean, there are different ways of doing it, you know, in more specialized Japanese places. It is more about the grill, the effect of the grill on the food, and hibachi doesn't have to be this flamboyant experience. It can be a different kind of grill, a little small hibachi grill, maybe it's fired with charcoal. Mm-hmm. But I think when I get a question like this from a listener asking for hibachi, I'm picturing hibachi in neon letters outside mm-hmm. of a busy restaurant.
Blinking neon letters? Blinking
neon letters? Yeah. Maybe one of the letters is missing. You know?
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's hibachi, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's the chef is leading the show around one of these tables. And, hey, entertainment dining is fine with me. But to the question, I've got two for you that I think put on a good experience with it. One is in Mid-City. It's called Hikura. It's right on Carrollton and Bienville.
How you spelling that, bro?
Hikura. I-K-U-R-A.
Okay, like the car, almost. Accurate. A-Q-U-R-A.
Right. Okay. And out in Metairie, the classic, Shogun. Mm-hmm. Shogun has a fantastic sushi bar, a big long sushi bar in the back, and if you just order the specials, really first class, even for, like, you know, sushi hounds, sushi aficionados who are going way beyond the menu standards. But then all around it are these hibachi tables where the flames are leaping up and people are oohing and ahhing and having a great time with it. And what I like about Shogun is they do both really well. They do sort of the, you know, both ends of the spectrum, for the sushi aficionado and somebody who wants a, you know, teriyaki steak cooked with some flair and spinning spatulas and an egg tossed into the air and the volcano onion and all that jazz.
Somebody else texted in, said they were at a restaurant last Friday night and they overheard the people next to them saying that you and I, I'm fixing the pronouns here so people understand what, basically they heard about the restaurant from you and I talking about it on WWL, and that's how they went to try the restaurant. So that's good. They didn't give me the name of the restaurant, but I tell you, one of them, somebody texted in about last week you spoke of a restaurant with a great lamb dish near Esplanade Avenue. Do you remember what it was?
This could have been a lamb dish near Esplanade Avenue. This could be a couple places. This might have been Lola's. The Spanish restaurant has good a couple good lamb dishes on it. It could be Cafe Dega. They always do a great lamb chops running through there on Esplanade Avenue, near Esplanade Avenue. I don't know. Maybe it's vacation brain taking hold here, Tommy, but I might need another clue or two on that one.
Tim told me something here. What'd you say, Tim? Lola's
Cafe Lola's? Dega.
Okay. All right, well, there you go.
While we're in that neighborhood, a story that I posted this week, it kind of speaks to what you're talking about the just before the break, about summertime. And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, you and I...
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Talked about how, yeah, it gets slow for New Orleans in general. It's not just restaurants and bars. Believe me, it's all kinds of businesses I hear from. But it also is a grand time for dining out in New Orleans for the locals. There's good deals out there. And also, it's the season, you know, and the chefs have access to all kinds of stuff that only come around in the summertime or at their best in the summertime. And they have a little more time to kind of get creative with it, lean into it, do special things. Great example of this. It was the subject of a story I posted early in the week, from the road, mind you, about Ralph's in the Park. Ralph's in the Park is a Ralph Brennan restaurant. They also have Brennan's, Napoleon House, Redfish Grill, Cafe Noma. I know I'm forgetting one. Sorry, guys. But Ralph's in the Park is right there by City Park, one of the few restaurants with like such a magnificent view of all the oaks and everything across the street of the park. And every summer they do a deal, 3 apps and a glass of wine for blank, for a set cost. This year, 3 apps and a glass of wine for $38. I checked my notes. 10 years ago, that deal was $33. So a $5 rise of the cost the course of 10 years. That was my homeowner's insurance or the cost of a gallon of milk or some eggs. I would take it. What I'm saying is a very relatively low increase, a screaming deal. And it was this one dish in particular that really captured my palate, my appetite. And it didn't seem like much. It's this sweet corn soup. It's called sweet corn and truffle cappuccino. That's what it's called. And it's a soup that arrives in a cappuccino cup. And this is normally not my style. It had a whiff of the 90s to it. You know, you're drinking a soup of the foamy top. It's warm. It's summertime. You're drinking it out of a cappuccino cup. It kind of signals a little 1990s, you know, out to dinner with Seinfeld and Kramer kind of thing. But I'm telling you, with one sip, I was wowed. My dining companion in the same boat. A few days later, we were at a New Orleans wine and food event, a wine tasting, and one of the tables set up for food samples was Ralph's in the Park. They had that soup. We had it again. Mind blown yet again, this time out of a paper cup at an event.
And tell me the name of the soup real quick before we take a break.
Corn and black truffle cappuccino.
And corn and it's black truffle?
On their, yeah, black truffle. Huh. And it's on their special appetizer and a glass of wine deal menu and on the regular dinner menu. And it was the essence of summer in the flavors and a great deal built around it. Me, that's why I just embodied the fun and the value of summer dining in New Orleans.
That's what we're talking about. We'll talk more about it with Ian McNulty when we come back. Questions about eating or drinking, 504-260-1870. Don't text and drive. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 947, 13 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with our friend Ian McNulty. Nice enough to give us an hour of his time while he is on the road, kind of like Route 66. And who's the guy that wrote about that? Do you remember? Kurt Vonnegut, maybe?
That's for sure.
I don't know. Either way, he's given us his time. We're appreciative of it. Ian, this is an interesting text, and it says, I recently fell into some money. I've always wanted to eat at nice restaurants. Don't know a lot about it, but don't want to miss out either. How do I get started? So I guess, Ian McNulty, this is about telling people how to carry maybe themselves in restaurants that are not used to doing fine dining, or also, but like things like how to tell your server the food's under or overcooked without sounding rude or complaining. Take them to give me an introductory course to fine dining.
Oh, come on. But first of all, you be you, right? And the great thing about New Orleans is we have world-class restaurants. We have restaurants that you won't find anywhere else in the world, but also restaurants that can stand up next to high-end, highly regarded, acclaimed restaurants around the world. Not necessarily the same thing. We add them all together, world-class dining scene. But it's also New Orleans, right? It's run by New Orleans people. Your waiters and waitresses and bartenders and managers are going to be New Orleans people. Picture yourself with the fanciest New Orleans wedding. You know, all the airs are on and everyone's dressed up, but it's still New Orleans. These are still your people. This is still your community. And that's one thing I love about it. There's not a lot of pinky in the air kind of pretension in New Orleans, even at the most expensive and finest restaurants. And, you know, when you're in the hands of pros, just say, hey, look, I'm new here. Show me around. What's good? What should I not miss? What are the house specialties? What does the chef hang his hat on? I'm here for a good time. If money is truly not an issue, say, you know, you're out at a casino. You know, there's only so much they can get out of you. So if you want to say, like, I don't want to miss the best stuff, you know, should I have the $150 tomahawk steak or should I have four of these appetizers to get the best taste of your restaurant? It's an enviable position to be in. And I mean it. I think you just be genuine. Don't be, the settings can be really nice. Don't be intimidated by that. It's still New Orleans people at the heart of all these things. Mm-hmm. You can relate to them. They can relate to you. And it's their job to show you a good time, and they should do it at whatever the price point, frankly.
So, and I'm looking at the clock here, and I want to get this in for this person because it seems as though they fell into some money. Good for them. They're going to start eating out and enjoying their life. Give me some, I don't know, some starter places or some bucket list places or some things that if they've not enjoyed places like Antoine's or Ralph's on the Park that we've already mentioned, or Palace. Give them some names.
Get a good base coat going with the local classics, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Go to the New Orleans classics that you're not going to find anywhere else in the world. You know, your Antoine's, your Galatoire's, more your Arnaud's, more modern Brennan's that has the same profile, the same history, relatively speaking, but has a much more modern culinary approach. And then, you know, you branch out to some of the modern restaurants that are doing really different things. Emeril's, tasting menu-only restaurant. It's pretty pricey, but, you know, if money's not an object, you're going to have a meal you'll be talking about for a long time at a place like that. Go explore other places that are doing different things, you know, again, at a higher rate for sure. But memorable talk worthy restaurants for a long time to come. St. Germain down in the Bywater. It's another tasting menu restaurant. Mamou on Rampart Street. Just real high-end, modern French in the edge of the French Quarter. Dory Metropolitan is a very high-end steakhouse, again, in the French Quarter. They can do things there that you're not finding at your normal American-style steakhouse, a little more global, very high-end. you know, and then circle back. You know, it's once you've been to the peak of these places for luxury and cost, you'll revisit places that are just really good value to pay off kind of restaurants. You know, go visit Susan Spicer over at Rosedale area. It's a killer wine list. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about New Orleans. Even if money is absolutely no issue, I'm talking to a millionaire over here. I'm talking to a billionaire over here. They want to eat at the finest high end places, the showboats. But they also want a really good po' boy. They also want a really good hole-in-the-wall New Orleans spot. And that's the richness and depth of exploring the New Orleans dining scene, because we excel at both ends of that spectrum.
And just don't fake the funk. Just be yourself. Don't try to be who you're not. Just enjoy yourself. And real quick, when it comes... Huh?
This is not Kermit... The high-end French restaurant and having the snooty maitre d' dress him down. This is New Orleans people, and even highest end of their craft, when it comes down to it, they're probably a Saints fan. They probably eat gumbo on the weekends with their friends. They are New Orleans people, and so are you, so you can connect.
So real quick before we let you go, because we're running out of time here, somebody texted in and said they're looking for the best dessert restaurants in town. I guess if you want to go in and order dessert first, you can, right? Does that mess anything up?
No, doesn't. No, make clear. You know, maybe you're sitting at the bar. If you just want to try a dessert, maybe you don't want to have a whole table for that. But my play is go to the places that are dessert specialists. Angelo Brocato's is the classic. You're having dinner somewhere, then you're going for dessert somewhere else. It extends the night. It makes it kind of that one-two hit, the two-stop date night. Go to Sucre uptown. They have a few different locations around town now. The Amore in Gretna, another dessert parlor. You got to play the hours right. Sometimes they're not open, you know, super late if you're having a late dinner. But otherwise, if you just want to sit at the bar at a high-end restaurant that's doing really nice desserts, Coquette would be a great example because they have a nice long bar. You can just go in, order whatever you'd like at the bar with an after-dinner drink if you like. And that way, it's not a full-service table situation where they're kind of expecting you to have a full meal or something resembling it. But also, on the other side of my mouth, Tommy, it's summertime. You know, the rules are off. They got to be glad to see you. Just read the room.
Yeah. What about it? Real quick, and one more question. Now we'll let you go. A tie. Do people wear ties anymore when they go out to eat?
Sure. Of course I do.
No, but I mean, as a prerequisite. Are
no,
there
it's
places?
Not a prerequisite. I mean, I like to see at super high-end places or, you know, places that feel appropriate for it, the old-school spots wearing a jacket for gents. Mm-hmm. But it's really not all that required anymore, even though it is appropriate. There's a difference. But ties, no one's going to look askance at no tie.
What a dumb question. Does anybody wear ties anymore? Yeah, I think they do wear ties. Ian McNulty, a pleasure as always, my friend. Safe travels. You can just Google Ian McNulty, find out everything you need to know about eating and drinking in New Orleans. 9:55, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.